This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson, you know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833.
All right, about to hop into a Bobby cast with Jay DeMarcus of Rascal Flatts. Hope you enjoy this. He's got a book coming out. I do want to mention a couple other things. Oh, blah, blah, blah. First of all, we have our whole layers of podcasts. By the way, Mike, I got a text from somebody else that's about to come on.
Okay.
Did she sign?
I think they're...
We're very soon to announcing a new podcast on the network.
We're pretty close to being able to announce that, yes.
Also, I have a very gift for you as a thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, so we're about to announce a new podcast on the network. Mm-hmm. I guess we can't yet.
Can't yet.
But Caroline Hobby's podcast, Get Real, is doing fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's always been great. And I'm just glad that we can finally shine a light on it and let you go, wow, because she had on Taylor Young, Brett Young's wife.
That's a really good one.
It's a really good one. Where she's like, they like broke up and she had to watch Brett Young get famous.
And they were together 6 years.
And he's like, peace out, yeah. Gotta go. Anyway, not as quick as that, but you should listen to that. It's called Get Real with Caroline Hobby, and it really is a fantastic podcast. Kelly Henderson has a podcast called Velvet's Edge, and you know, she just had a big hit on that very Cavallari show,
yeah,
which was good for her.
Yeah, and she brings people on from that show onto her podcast.
So you can check that out. I'll mention that we, the Raging Idiots, are going on tour starting, I don't know when you'll hear this, but we'll be all summer, all fall. But RagingIdiots.com, we're bringing out Walker Burroughs from American Idol, the red-haired kid who was really good playing the piano, looked like Harry Potter, and Emma Klein. And then you can always check out Amy's podcast, Four Things with Amy Brown, really needs no introduction. If you love Amy, you'll love the podcast. What's her latest episode, what she talks about?
Oh, she has the Q&A one up today, which she does every Tuesday. She answers people's questions. And on the last one, she had on the guy from the Enneagram, talking about like numbers and stuff.
Is that what Dave Haywood was... Like, what's your Enneagram number?
Yeah, a bunch of people are coming here talking about that.
I need to remember what mine is. I think mine was a 3. Three. Watch 3 be like, super douchey with small wiener. Then I was like, yeah, that's me.
That's me.
So there's that. And then if you're into sports, check out The Sore Losers with Lunchbox and Raymundo and Producer Eddie as they put up a new show like 4 times a week. That being said, there's this one we're about to get into. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
I think that covers it, yeah.
Coming up on this show, I believe we have a Judah and the Lion podcast coming up possibly in the next week or so.
Morgan Evans,
that's true, who I Mike and I were talking off the other day. I can't believe he hasn't been on yet. I've talked with him about the podcast about 10 times. Morgan Evans, who has Sometimes You Gotta Kiss Somebody. You know that one? Yeah. He's a big listener, so shout out Morgan Evans. And he's also a friend, which... I guess is why I didn't feel like I had talked to him on the podcast. I talked to him in real life. He'll be on too. And we're trying for some other ones. Lauren Daigle is going to come by.
Yeah.
Not this week or next week, but
probably next month.
Yeah, probably next month. Yeah. And Hey, Billy Ray Cyrus working on you, buddy.
I know.
How hard does it get? Maybe the Lil Nas X stuff got him.
Like he has some stuff going
he's too
on.
Busy right now.
But maybe next month, too. He'll be here.
That being said, tell your friends about this if you don't mind. Go back and check out any of the library of podcasts. And yeah, here we go with Jada Marcus from Rascal Flatts.
Trying to get a nut.
I'm the ultimate squirrel. Always trying to get a nut.
Me too, buddy.
And it's a grind.
Book. You name it.
Yeah. Episode 177 with Jada Marcus of Rascal Flatts. So we're about to start saying this off the air because, it's tough to sell books.
Yeah.
Especially when it's not what you're known for.
Right. Exactly.
Because that's been my thing is that write a book.
Like, yeah.
What does Bobby, what does Jay know about books? And so, yeah, you have to kind of go out and rehustle.
You do. Yeah. Wait, musicians can write and read?
Exactly.
Yeah, you do. I mean, yeah. I'm always up for a new challenge, though. I think you and I are wired more alike probably than we know. I love to work. Like, idle time does not serve me well.
Yeah, me either.
I can't sit around and, you know, I'll start spinning out about the silliest things if I do, you know.
Is it some sort of deeper, maybe psychological thing that we like to work? Like, are you trying to prove, who are you trying to prove something to? Yourself?
I think if you read part of that book, it would be my dad. You know, there's a lot of me that feels like I never quite lived up to what he expected me to be, I guess. And that put a lot of pressure on me, which I used as fuel early on in life, but it still fuels me.
And for me, it's been like I grew up in pretty close to poverty. And so it's like trying to prove.
Me too.
To everybody that. So I wish my idle time, my itchiness with idle time was just because I do love working, but I think I've convinced myself I love working because I'm trying to prove it to everyone that I can make it.
Yeah, I think that I have a little bit of that in me too. It's like whenever you have some success and you celebrate it, you don't celebrate it and live in the moment long enough because I go, I got to do more because I haven't done enough yet. I got to get back after it and go back out there and do something good again. And a lot of it I like to try to prove to myself too that I can take on new challenges and have some degree of success with it, you know. And I guess I'm just wired that way. I am truly a workaholic. There is no doubt about it. I think it drives my partners crazy sometimes.
Partners in all capacities? Or are you talking about in the band?
I'm talking about in the band.
Yeah, meaning you're always wanting to do what?
Well, I always want to go. I mean, if there's money on the table, dates, let's go get it. If there's work to be done, let's go do it. And Gary, I wish I had a little more him in me because he loves to go out to the farm, decompress. I mean, he could stay out there for big chunks of times, and there's nothing wrong with that. We're just wired differently. So to exist in the same band sometimes, I'm like, I don't think I can sit around for 5 months. I got to do something. How about write a book?
How long ago did the book start to be a seed in you?
I think years ago because I keep journals, you know, I like keep notes of things so I can remember them. And I started keeping notes when Rascal Flatts did our first radio tour, literally that long ago, because I wanted to remember certain things and certain aspects of what we were doing. And I always thought someday we may have a chance to write a book out into the future sometime when this all comes to whatever close it's gonna look like. And so I started keeping notes, and the more that I did, the more I started to reflect on my life, just myself, and really reflect on all of the things that transpired to get me here to eventually meet Joe Don one day, and then Gary come to town and us do what we have done. And I started to look at it and go, maybe there's some people that can like be inspired by some of the crap that I went through.
Right.
And maybe they can find their own hope to forge ahead, to get up, dust themselves off, keep moving forward. Because, you know, a lot of times when we see our favorite entertainers, actors, musicians, whatever they are, you see the culmination of a lot of stuff and a lot of hard work that got them to that point. You didn't just end up on American Idol one day by accident. You went through a lot of things to get you there. I didn't end up in Rascal Flatts. I went through a lot of crap and a lot of hard stuff to get me there. And I think people deal with the same things you and I have dealt with. And they deal with the same adversity, the same tough times. And sometimes you want to quit. I mean, there were many times that I wanted to throw the towel in and move back home and just forget the silly dream of music career. And I didn't. I found some ounce of hope here and there, some friend or some text or something that would happen just in time before I would give up to help keep me going.
The name of the book, let me shout the book out here. Everybody knows you, but Jay DeMarcus of Rascal Flatts. It's called Shotgun Angels, My Story of Broken Roads and Unshakable Hope. And it's funny you mention all the crap that you go through, because in the first book that I wrote, I had to kind of relive some of that stuff, which I just kept compressed for so long, just pushed it down inside. Yeah. And it was tough to not just acknowledge it, but to kind of dredge it all back up and relive it to be in my form of accurate about it.
Yeah,
did you go through that at all?
I joked the other day that I had a bottle of vodka sitting right by the laptop because I'd have to shut it and take a break sometimes. And when the stuff comes boiling back up to the surface and you do relive it, if you're an emotional person at all, you feel those emotions all over again and how you felt when you were living through that. And that was one of the things that I didn't expect that kind of caught me off guard a little bit, that I would actually go back into it so deeply. But I definitely did, and there were times that I'd take a break from it. I stepped away, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that still affects me as strongly today as it did, 25, 30 years ago.
It's wild to me as I was reading. I didn't get a chance to finish it, and Mike D read the whole thing, and he pulled out some parts for me to read. How you guys got together is very interesting to me. I think we'll start there, and then I want to go back to the Christian band and the scholarship. There's a lot... Again, stuff that, and I felt like we've known each other at least semi-socially for a while. I had no idea a lot of this stuff, which is interesting just on the music side of things. And so we'll go back to the beginning of the Flatts.
Yeah.
Or Rascal Flatts. Mm-hmm. Not the Rascal Flatts. So for everybody listening right now,
that's right.
Don't call them the Rascal Flatts. Dear God. we're gonna move past college. We're going to get back to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And you're in town, and you have a cousin that you guys weren't super close.
We were growing up, but we lost touch.
You'd lost touch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is Gary.
Yeah.
And Gary had been winning some karaoke competitions.
Yeah. So I kept hearing grumblings back home when I would go back for the holidays that, hey, your cousin Gary, he's been singing a little bit. And I'd be like, really? That's neat. And it wasn't that I was being mean about it, but I was following my own path, and I had the Christian band. And then somebody told me that he was talking to a producer in LA about doing an R&B thing, and that he and Jamie Foxx had spent some time together. My uncle had actually told me that, and I was like, he knows Jamie Foxx? That's kind of cool. And it was lost on me that, again, he was talking about singing and doing a pop thing. And then my mom called me one day, and she goes, now your cousin Gary's going to call you, and you need to listen to him sing. He's been winning some contests up here. He's been singing.
In Ohio, right.
Yeah, and you need to listen to him sing. I was like, Mom, are you kidding me? The last thing I want to do is tell some family member who I'm not really that close to anymore, you shouldn't try this. And she said, well, I've talked to, she called Judy, Gary's mother, Jude Babe. They were closer than sisters. They still are. She said, well, listen, I've already told Jude Babe that you're going to listen to him, so you just need to let him come over there when he's down there and sing for you. Well, he was on his way to vacation in Florida, and he stopped by my apartment in Brentwood, and I sat down, and I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, the first song he sang was One Last Cry by Brian McKnight, and I knew it well enough on the piano to kind of hack through it, and he just stopped me in my tracks. I mean, when he opens his voice and you hear that come out of him, it's otherworldly. I mean, I describe it in the book as all of these ingredients of gospel and R&B and country rolled up into one. I'd never heard anything quite like it before. And it had an immediate identifiable personality to it that was just shocking to me. And we kept talking over the next several weeks, several months, and I said, you got to move to town. It's never going to find you in Columbus. And he was struggling because he had a great job. He had debt. He had bills. He'd already forged a life for himself. And he called me one day and he said, that's it. I'm coming to town. I can't do this anymore. And if I don't do it, I'm afraid I'll regret it for the rest of my life. And he lived on my couch. I had a one-bedroom apartment and he lived on my couch. And we played everywhere we could. And when people would hear him, the reaction was just undeniable. You could see it in their faces. They were like, oh my God, this guy is up there singing Merle Haggard, but singing like R&B licks. in it. And now if you turn on country radio, you hear a whole host of singers that were touched by him and influenced by him. And that's a testament to what his gift was and what he was able to bring to this town and build upon.
So you guys are playing shows at Printer's Alley a couple nights a week, a few nights a week.
Yeah.
And
doesn't even exist anymore, the place we played.
Where was it?
It was a Fiddle and Steel Guitar Bar. I think it's a boutique hotel now.
So you go and you say, hey, Gary, we're going to get a gig, just the two of us. And how do you get that gig? You go up and just say, hey, guy, here's the tape. What's that?
I'll tell you. So the guy playing up on stage, we'd go in and hear him sing, and he would let us sit in and do a song. The owner was in there one night. Allison was her name. And Greg Perkins, they owned it together. And she walked over and she said, would you guys want to do a night here? And Gary said, I don't even live here full time. I'm just visiting on the weekends. She said, if you guys will do a couple of nights here a week, I'll fire him and give you his gig.
The guy that you were singing a song.
The guy that was letting us.
The guy that helped you.
That's how cutthroat Nashville yeah, right? is, you know? And we so we left and we talked about it. And I said, do you want to do this? And then that's around the time he called me and said, I'm moving to town. Let's take that gig and see what happens. And it was the two of us sitting beside a cigarette machine. I had my keyboard and he had a mic. Well, I had two mics. And sometimes there were two people in there. Sometimes there were 20. Sometimes there were 40. But slowly but surely, we started to build a following that would come in and see us. And then the owners came to us and said, we're thinking about buying the other side of this building, knocking down the wall that separates the two, putting a stage together. Would you put a band together? And I knew a bunch of guys from various bands that I was sitting in with, and Gary and I were friends with a circle of buddies that were great musicians and had been playing in different places with them, so we put a band together.
So you're playing with Shelley Wright at this time too, right? Like as your main gig, you're playing with Shelley Wright. You're playing keys.
Yeah, I was her band leader.
Okay, so you're running the band, you're playing keys, and you had hired a guitarist, which was Joe Don.
Yeah.
And so when you're putting the band together, is that when you bring Joe Don in?
No, he didn't start playing with us right away. A guy named Shane Sutton played with us. Fantastic player, fantastic singer. And we were playing down there for probably several months. And then I get a call one night, and Shane says, man, I can't get out of bed. I've got the flu, I've got a fever, and I'm sorry to do this to you, but I can't make it tonight. It was on a Monday night, and I thought, oh, no, what are we going to do? I know who can play this. I know who can do it. I'm going to call Joe Don. I called him up. I said, hey, what are you doing tonight? He's like, nothing. I'm just sitting around. I said, let's play tonight. You want to? You want to sit in with us? I said, I've been telling you about my cousin anyway. I want you to hear him and meet him in real life. And I'd been telling, you know, Gary about Joe Don and how talented he was. So we pull up at the club, and Joe Don's sitting his guitar amp up, and he's up there tuning up. Gary looks at me. He goes, who is that? I said, well, man, I didn't want to tell you this, but Shane's sick. And he goes, are you kidding me? This guy isn't going to know a thing that we do. We got to play till 3 a.m., and if this sucks, I'm out of here. You can have this by yourself. And I was like, Gary, please, like, just give him a shot. He would barely even speak to Joe Don. It was so funny. He was so frustrated. And I understand. See, Gary was getting up at 4:30 a.m. to throw papers. So we'd finish in the club at 2. He slept.
He'd go right to work.
Yeah, and he'd go right to work throwing papers. So I understood his frustration. But, man, we got up there together, and the first song, I think we played it on one of your shows. The first song we ever played together was Church on the Cumberland Road by Shenandoah. And we hit that first chorus, man, and I don't know what happened, but it was just, we all knew immediately. We looked at each other like, that is good, and we've got to have more of that.
So Shane, the original guitar player, is the name right? He basically got Wally Pipped. And Wally Pipp played first base for the Yankees forever, and Wally Pipp got hurt. Nothing, he didn't do anything wrong.
I know.
But he got hurt, and here comes Lou Gehrig, who's going to fill in, and then here it's now the Lou Gehrig world.
I know.
What does Shane say about that?
Shane's still a buddy of ours. We still see him out playing with different artists and playing guitar, but he obviously gives us massive amounts of crap for us firing him, basically. And never, I had to call him and tell him he couldn't come back, and that was really awkward. I was like, I think we're gonna go ahead and stick with Joe Don. But I think anybody that heard us sing together, and he would definitely tell you this too, got that there was a special chemistry and a blend that we had that was not common.
What was happening in Nashville at that time, though? You three are now, you go, okay, this might be something. But what was like the environment like because you guys cut through so hard because you were so different. Mm-hmm. Now you kind of created where everyone else has gone, so it doesn't seem like you're that different. You guys have opened these roads up for a lot of artists nowadays. At the time, who was popping around town where they're like, you know what, you're not like them. We don't know if this can be a thing quite yet.
Yeah, you know, Nashville was pretty safe back then. I mean, there were glimpses of pop in music. I mean, you had your South 65s and your, Marshall Dillon was around. But they were definitely trying to be five guys that danced and were trying to bring the boy band vibe over to country music. And it really wasn't resonating because they didn't play instruments. It felt... No offense to those guys that were trying to make a living and do something, but it felt contrived, honestly. And we were fans of bands that were really great harmony bands like Diamond Rio and Shenandoah at the time, and the Eagles were a huge influence on us. So that's really what we were trying to do, was bring elements of what we loved about pop music, but still great authentic harmonies, and the songs, the meat on the bone of the songs with something to say in a different way is really what we tried to hone in on and make the foundation of what we were. We weren't even really trying to be a band. We didn't set out to do that. I wanted to produce and write and help Gary get a record deal so that I could try to be a record producer and be successful in that way. I'd already done the artist thing, and we know how that turned out by the book, but it sort of had no aspirations to do another artist thing. I wanted to kind of forge a different career, but the more we had a following and the more we sang together, it just felt like it was evolving into that.
Let's rewind. I grew up Pentecostal for a while. My grandmother was Pentecostal.
You did?
Yeah.
Scary, isn't it?
You know, it's for me... that when they would speak in tongues, it scared the crap out of me.
I know, me too. Yeah.
And so I remember going, and my grandmother, who adopted me for a long time, and she would speak in tongues in church, and it never became something that I was just like, oh, this is part. I was always scared by it.
Yeah.
That there was so much passion and love in a Pentecostal church.
No doubt.
The most, by the way, of all of, you know, my time of being really in the fabric of church. That was the closest I'd ever seen church.
Yeah.
So as much as I'm like, that scared me, it was also, I'd never seen a close-knit group like the Pentecostal church. What was your experience? Because I know that was a big part of your life.
Much the same. I was scared to death. They always told you, bring your friends to church. And I'd say to my mom, why would I ever
scare them?
Want my friends to see what lunatics you guys act like when you run around and speak in tongues and jump all over the pews and everything. And I was never, and you know, this is the truth, though. I have to say it. I was never very, very comfortable in that environment because it wasn't the way that I believed that I needed to express myself and my beliefs.
I was the same way. Yeah.
And it always troubled me a little bit, but I admired the fact that people were so dedicated to it. And you're absolutely right. There was so much love, so much. I've always felt like I was surrounded by a family of people that would do anything in the world for me, even though I may not have agreed with exactly how they went about it, you know? So for me, I'm glad that I went through that because it laid a really deep foundation for the groundwork for my faith later on in life. And I had to really figure out what I believed and why I believed it, because I knew I didn't believe a bunch of that stuff that I was exposed to. And I'm not saying that it wasn't real. It was real for them, whatever that was. But I had to deconstruct my belief system and figure out why I believed what I believed, and not just because I was indoctrinated with it when I was a kid.
And so you start to play music, but you're playing Christian music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why Christian music?
Well, I wasn't allowed to listen to quote unquote secular music when I was a kid. I couldn't listen to Kiss and AC/DC until later on in life. Like a lot of the kids were listening to that, so I went turned to bands like Petra and Mylon Lefevre and Whiteheart and bands that were rock but were using a positive Christ-centered message. Those were my influences. And so going to church and believing in God myself and believing in Christ myself, I started to write a lot of that kind of music. And the more I wrote, the more I really got into that and felt like maybe that was what I was supposed to do. And when I got to college and I was working at the studio there on the campus, I was doing all kinds of demos and having my roommate, Neil, sing the demos. And I was mailing them to publishers to try to get a songwriting deal. And I got a call from Benson Records one day, Don Cook at Benson Records, not the Country Don Cook, the KOCH, and he said, I love your band. We'd like to bring you to town to talk about doing a record on you. And I, of course, had to tell him we're not a band. I was just trying to get a pub deal. But
so as you're deciding where to go to school, these folks come to you and say, if you'll go to school here, we'll actually pay away your debt. We'll mm-hmm. pay your carpet. Like they say, hey, we're going to write you a check, what, $3,000, what it was?
Yeah, something like that.
We're going to pay you, if you come to school here and perform with the band that was at school?
Yeah, so this guy was known for handpicking the best musicians at the school and putting together a recruiting ensemble. So this particular group of kids, it'd be four singers, four musicians, a couple of other road crew and things, and we traveled on a tour bus. And we went around to youth camps, youth conventions. We went around to churches. We went around to camp meetings. And you're in Pentecostal church. I know you know what a camp meeting is, but we would sing and then we would talk about the school. And so we'd try to recruit kids to come to the school. We'd go overseas. I had the opportunity to see a whole bunch of the world at a very young age playing with that group. But as long as you played in that group, you could keep your scholarship. You could keep going to school. And that's kind of what my job was. So a lot of these kids that would go home for the summer, that wasn't me. I toured all of my summers in school. And Neil and I were dear friends. We became dear friends. And lo and behold, we ended up in East to West together.
And here is the number one song from East to West, Prince of Peace. When the lion lays down with the lamb. How long has Mitch heard this?
Oh, my Lord. Probably years.
Yeah?
Probably
turn
years.
Turn it up a little bit. Now, as I was doing my research about East to West, I looked like there were more than one lead singer.
We both shared leads.
So you both were doing the lead.
Mm-hmm.
What's that sort of dynamic when you have dual lead singers?
Well, it worked well for us because I played bass and keys too. So, and there's no doubt Neil did the lion's share of the lead vocals, and I would take a verse here or there, and you know, and that sort of thing, and maybe sing one song on the albums I would sing. So it worked really, really well because I cared. You know, I was such a musician and muso head that I wanted to like play everything I could and play a lot of it on the record. And so I was content to let Neil kind of shine and do his own thing. And he was a fantastic singer, but it worked well for us.
Here is Welcome to the Next Level from East to West.
When you can hear those Mr. and Go West influences, can't you?
You definitely can hear that era.
Yeah.
When you're in a Christian band, do you get girls?
Yes, but they've got to be Christians.
No, I
I'm just kidding.
But you know, like, do you get girls? Like, are they just are they like, hey, band guys, we'd like to have fellowship? I mean,
let's go to Bible study.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not like it is in country music or pop for sure. But there are girls that are hanging around, you know. There are.
It's funny that, you know, you're dual lead singing. And
that's such a funny question.
And you're still going, you know, I'm content with playing because I think that's a big part of why. Again, from the outside looking in, why Flats has been able to be so wonderful is that you can sing, but you're actually okay not being the lead.
When I stand next to somebody that sings like Gary does every night, it's like, what's the point? I love to sing, but I love singing harmony with him because I feel like we have something unique. And he's, you know, it's like anything he sings is better, 10 times better than anything I would come up with. And that's okay. I think one of our strengths is we realize what gifts and strengths we all three individually bring to the table, and we try to lean on those with each other. And you're right. I am okay because I get to sing beside one of the greatest vocalists I've ever had the privilege of being around every night. And that's a treat.
You know, for me, I would listen to the Goo Goo Dolls, and they had this bassist, and he sings like one or two cuts every record. And mm-hmm. I would get so annoyed. Like, let Johnny Resnick be the lead singer. You know, I'll get.
Yeah.
It's rare that there's a band. I'll give you a couple examples, but they do different things. Linkin Park had two singers.
Mm-hmm.
They had Mike Shinoda, and they had
Chester Bennington.
Chester would be the vocalist, the straight, and Shinoda would do like the rapping. Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah.
They had Steven and Ed, and Steven was the big singer, and Ed was kind of the rappy guy, which Steven got kicked out of the band for a whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you guys ever talk about that in Flats, where like you would do the few songs?
I didn't want to be that annoying guy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, we know the bass player sings too. But I will tell you, when we played the clubs, you know, we'd have to play 5 hours a night. So we passed around the lead vocals a lot more often back then, because it's a lot to ask Gary to sing 5 hours a night in smoky bar rooms. Back then, you could still smoke in the bar rooms. And so we did sing a lot more, but I saw the value of having that lead vocalist established, and the sound that he had was so identifiable and so great that it wouldn't, it just wasn't that important to me to have a song on the record where I sang. Now, Joe Don and I have sung verses here and there on some songs, but I just don't think it's that important to either one of us to like, oh, look at me, I can sing a lead vocal too. I love bands that have multiple lead singers, by the way. I mean, the Eagles, right. I mean, Lady Antebellum, I love right. that they all sing. I love that, you know, we can go back to Chicago, Peter Cetera and Bill Champlin and, you know, Terry Kath when he was still alive. So there is a merit in that, I think. And we could certainly sing a song, but it's just never been that important to us.
Today's technology makes it a lot easier for a lot of things because you're connected. Your cell phone is connected to your tablet. Your tablet's connected to your smart TV, and they're all connected to your Wi-Fi, but it may take only one weak link and all those connections for a criminal to get in. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security. While LifeLock uses proprietary technology to detect possible threats to your identity, like your info for sale on the dark web, Norton Security helps protect up to 5 of your devices from online threats like ransomware, and if there's a problem, their dedicated agents will work to fix it. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock with Norton gives you more protection for today's connected world. Join now, get 10% off your first year. Head to LifeLock.com, enter the promo code BONES. That's promo code BONES for 10% off your first year. LifeLock.com, promo code BONES. So how'd you get ready today? Did you shower, brush your teeth, wash your face, style your hair? I'm asking because as a proud member of Dollar Shave Club, I'm here to tell you that no matter what you do to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You want a clean mouth and fresh breath, right? The intense peppermint flavor of Dollar Shave Club's toothpaste will wake you up and last a surprisingly long time. Their hydrating body cleanser smells awesome. Skin feels great after you shower. But I hope showering and brushing your teeth are just part of how you get ready. But no matter how you do, Dollar Shave Club has everything that you need. And I haven't even mentioned their razors and shave butter that everybody knows them for, including myself. Right now, you can get a Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5 each. They got a shower set, a toothpaste, a toothbrush set, all their famous shave butter, the razor. Any of those sets, just $5. And it's the best way to try out their amazing products. It's a great gift. After your starter set products ship at a regular price, right? Get yours today, dollarshaveclub.com/bones. dollarshaveclub.com/bones. You know, for me, and I related with the first part of your book as it starts, because I've been at the right place a few times, but I've been at that place when it's the wrong place many, many, many times.
Oh, yeah.
And where you just sit there and go, man, I just can't wait for my shot. One day. And, you know, and all of a sudden, I'll give you an example, because I think your book starts with a really great story about just life in general. Just a recent example. I've been working on Idol now as a mentor. You know, I'm on every episode, have bit parts, but that's Luke and Katie and Lionel's show and Ryan's show.
Yeah.
And I come on, and I'm on 10, 15 minutes for 2 hours, which is a great look for me. But Ryan got sick, and they're like, it's 15 minutes before the show starts. We need somebody to host the show. Bobby, we need you to host American Idol. And I'm like, great. Like, for 15 years, I've been just waiting for this shot, right? Waiting.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you read the news, the next day, and it's like, wow, this guy lucked out. It's like, wait, I've been in the wrong place so many times. Yeah. Like, 10,000 times, nothing's happened. And I find, but because of that one look I got where Ryan got sick, now a lot of these doors have opened up because I got a stage, and I was able to do relatively well.
Yeah.
And your book starts with, the dude gets sick, snowstorm.
Yes,
and
he's stuck in a snowstorm. Yeah,
and he can't get there. So you sing.
Yeah, the owner of the venue said, I've got a house full of people and no artist. What are we going to do? Can somebody go out and like do a few praise and worship songs and explain our situation? And I said, I got a keyboard. Like, I can go out and sing some songs. And, you know, miraculously enough, they stayed. And we ended up doing about an hour, you know. And it was one of the first legitimate times I thought, well, there's opportunity meeting preparedness. Like, I had practiced my whole entire life for that one moment, really. And I was a nervous wreck, but you know how those things go. You feel confident in your ability and your skill set enough to go, I'm a nervous wreck, but I'm going to overcome and suppress these nerves so I can go out there and do what I feel like I'm meant to do. And I even say that in the book, there was a moment where everything slowed down. I took a deep breath and I was like, yeah, I'm in my element. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Isn't that crazy? I felt the same way. It was like, what? I have to go on in 15 minutes? They're like, yeah, no time for rehearsal.
Yeah.
And I'm, but about a third of the way through the show, I went, oh, like, yeah, this is a big deal, but this is what I've been waiting to do. Like, I've worked to get here, and my skill set is that, to
yeah.
good on the prompter, good with people. I know Luke and Lionel really well. I know Katie a little bit, so I can talk with them. And
well, forget the prompter. You're good on your feet, too, more importantly.
Yes.
You know, the prompter could go dead, and I'm quite sure you could carry the whole show by yourself. And that, people, it amazes me, too, because I've done a little bit of that. I've done some acting. I've done a little bit of podcasting and hosting some things here and there. And I co-host the Miss Tennessee pageant with my wife for the past 12 years. And people don't appreciate how hard it is to get up in front of a crowd, especially live television, and have to stretch and fill in blank spaces while people are screaming into your ears what's coming next and what you need to talk about next. And I have to say, even to this day, you and I don't spend a lot of time visiting with one another, but you're one of the best at it I've ever seen. And I, you know, the future is only going to get brighter for you, man. You're scratching the surface.
I'm getting older, though.
Well, so am I.
Nah.
I'm older than you.
You know, your wife, though, I like your wife a lot. She's always been super kind to me.
She's awesome.
She hasn't come through yet with finding me a girlfriend. Every time I see her, she's like, I'm going to set you up. Never. Not once.
Well, you know, you need to start a Christian band.
I don't need to start any more bands.
Get a girl pregnant, then you get kicked out of that said Christian band.
All right, so, okay. That was the first story that for me, when I wrote my first book, I just wondered what they were going to run with.
Yeah.
Like, because you send it out to people.
It's clickbait.
And you go, what clickbait will they create?
Yeah.
And yours was, it said, you got a girl pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at the Gap. But you didn't get her pregnant at the Gap. You met her at the Gap. Although that'd have been a great, yes, that's the clickbait. Jay got gets a girl pregnant at the Gap.
Inner Gap.
Yeah, Inner Gap. Well, both. Yeah, yeah. That would have been truer.
That would have been truer. There's so many places that could go. Yeah, that was a, you know, people have said to me, it's hard to believe that you had sex one time, and there's no reason to make that story up. It could just as easily say we had sex 100 times and I ended up getting her pregnant with the same result. But it is the truth. It was one time, condom broke, my life turned around in one instant. And everybody that had anything to do with me in my career at that point in my life, most of the people, there were some great friends that stood by me and supported me and loved me no matter what. But most of the people, some of whom had jobs because of my career, scattered. I got dropped by my record label, management, booking agency. It all just went away. And I say this, I believe all too often people that call themselves Christians kill their wounded instead of nursing them back to health and making sure that they're okay. And that's what pisses me off so much about organized religion. It's so judgmental and it's so easy to cast a stone at somebody when they've got a million problems of their own and they battle millions of demons themselves. And that's what I wanted to write the book for, was to say there's a different side to being a believer. And being a believer doesn't mean that you're perfect. It's actually quite the opposite. It's admitting that we're all flawed human beings that need help. I don't believe any of us are meant to live through this life alone and handle all of this crap by ourselves.
You know, it's almost that there's strength and vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same thing that you're saying right there. Like, we think that the right thing is to be the right, whatever right means, by the way.
It was, right.
But
right.
Yeah.
See? Like right.
So you only had sex with her one time. Condom mm-hmm. broke. Did you know immediately the condom broke?
I knew it broke. You know,
we're getting down in the weeds here.
Yeah,
but
we are.
Did you hear the pop?
No.
Okay.
Well, I realized after we'd finished. And I freaked out so badly, she left. She didn't want anything to do with me. She was like, you're freaking me out. This is so weird. It's not like that. These things don't happen. It's going to be okay. And I said, you don't understand. And I was really freaking out. And because I'd made a commitment to myself and I was trying to do it the right way. I was going to wait till I was married, have sex on the wedding night, do the whole thing that you're taught to do when you're a Bible-believing Christian. And that was important to me. And I failed in that.
But this wasn't your first time to have sex ever, though.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But while I was in the Christian band, though, I definitely lived what I was trying to stand for, you know?
But when you're in the Christian band, like would you have sex with girls?
Mm-mm. No.
Good for you.
I did before. I mean, when I was in college, I went through a phase where I lost my mind. But when I was in the Christian band, I was very good about, and I dated a girl that was a Christian artist too. So it was easy for us to help keep each other in check and make sure we didn't cross those lines that we couldn't, you know, we wanted to. No, get me wrong.
But that's good though, because I'm a big believer in if you surround yourself with the best people, then you make the best decisions.
Yeah.
So if you have her with you, and it doesn't have to be this one even instance.
Right.
But if she's a good influence on you, it makes you make good decisions. You go to college. You say you lose your mind in college a little bit?
Yeah, I definitely was one of those kids that had been sheltered a little bit. And I always, and you know, I tell the story about my mom and how she struggled as a single parent. I always tried to keep my nose clean as a teenager and as a kid growing up, because I saw what my mom was doing to make sacrifices to make sure our life was good. And so I didn't do a whole lot of partying in high school. I didn't, you know, I kept my nose pretty clean. I did have sex when I was 17 with my girlfriend, but I felt really guilty about it and never did it again. But then I got to college and I was around a whole group of like-minded people, liked to party a little bit, started hanging out with some, you know, pastor's girls, or when they get out of the nest, they like to get out and you know, test that newfound freedom. And there were moments that I'm not proud of. I went through a lot of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Debauchery in college.
I think we should shout out your mom real quick, because you do mention that single mom worked two jobs and to put you in a Christian private school.
I know,
like, you're broke and she's working to put you in school.
Yeah.
Which showed what she valued for you, her kid. And I mean, that's not even just to put clothes on you, but also make sure you get into a Christian school.
I know. It was remarkable now when I look back on it. And, you know, not until later on in life did she tell me how much money she would have left in her wallet or how much food we would really have in the pantry, that she was going, how in the world am I going to make this last through the weekend, living paycheck to paycheck? Somehow, some way, it all came together. And she told me stories that's unbelievable about boxes of groceries showing up on our front porch, and she would not know where they'd come from. Things like that I had no knowledge of until much later on in life, you know.
It's wild you say that, because for me growing up, I finally figured out who it was, but it was the church. They mm-hmm. would drop off Christmas presents and food.
Wow.
And the PTA, because yeah. You know, my mom or my grandmother, when she was just raising me and my little sister, they would know.
Yeah.
And they would drop it off and we would get to eat. Or I remember once for Christmas, I got a color by number paint set. It was the only gift I got the whole year. A color by number paint set. And I painted it was the stupidest duck, but it was the best duck I ever painted. Like, it was my Christmas gift, and the church brought it and left it at the door with a bow on it and didn't say who it was. We found out it was the church.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's funny you say that, because
I love those stories though, man.
And I think those have lasted with me to how I try to treat people too. I don't know if it has for you, like if that's left an impression with you.
Definitely. It definitely makes me think about the way that I treat people. But it also, I think, has allowed me to live in the moments and the life that I've been able to live and appreciate it to a deeper level too, maybe than some others would. Because I wake up every day, and this is no joke, thanking God for the chance to do what we've been able to do for nearly 20 years now, which is almost unheard of in this day and age. But I really don't take it for granted, because I feel so blessed far beyond what I ever imagined I would have been. And it's not lost on me how hard it is to make it in the music industry. You see it all the time, how many people come to this town every single day hoping for a career in the music business. And I'm just so grateful to be able to look back on all I have been through, but to know that all of that was for a very necessary reason. And now on the other side of it, I can really look at it and go, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, God, so much.
Mm. You talk about being 20 years in. 20 years? And to maintain a level of success for that long. But I look back at like your first, let me play your first single here for one second. let's go back. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's do, I have the whole thing here. Let's do These Days. I wake up and teardrops that fall now, down. Before the video was shot, as you write, mm-hmm. you thought you had a heart attack.
Yeah, I was dealing with panic attacks pretty badly in my mid to late 20s, and I would have them periodically, but this one was a really bad one. And I thought I was having a heart attack, so I drove myself to St. Thomas, and I spent most of the night there.
But this is also right before the video shoot.
Right before the video shoot. Yeah, I called our manager and said, and he was like, yeah, it's a bigger deal than what you think to just move a whole entire video shoot. And I said, well, I'm exhausted. I've been at the hospital all night. They've been running blood tests, and I don't think I can make it. And he goes, come in as late as you can, but please do your best to be there because we can't move these times. And I showed up and sat down beside Allison in the makeup chair.
And that, by the way, is your wife.
Yes.
Now, as the book says, she was engaged. And listen, I'm going to press you a little bit about this. Because you sit down in a makeup chair as you go and you're tired and you've had a heart attack / panic attack the night before. First video. Mm-hmm. You sit down. They're going to make you pretty. And there she is.
Yeah.
And what do you say?
I said, hey, how are you doing? She's like, fine. Nothing back, like playing tennis by yourself. I'm like,
Now, she doesn't have a ring on.
No, they made her take it off.
They had her take it off for the video.
That's exactly right. So I'm like, I'll try again. Where are you from? Jackson, Tennessee. Again, playing tennis by yourself. Nothing, no lob back. Where are you from? Oh, Columbus, Ohio. I'm glad you asked. You know, I'm just sitting there like working so hard. And I'm like, so have you heard the song before? And she's like, I don't really listen to country music. I think I heard one of your songs like called Waiting for Midnight. I'm like, well, actually, it's Praying for Daylight. Really big fan, I can tell. So she was not cold, but standoffish, you know. And now looking back, I understand why. But as the day went on and the longer the waits were in between each setup and each take, we started to talk, and I really, really enjoyed her company.
But let me stop you for a second. But standoffish because she was engaged.
Right.
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 You just didn't know that.
I did not know that.
Right.
In my defense, I did not know that.
And so you guys are shooting the video, and you're getting to know each other, and you're feeling a vibe.
Yeah. All I know is I like being around her. And
she was hot.
She was hot.
Right.
I mean, she was really hot.
Oh, she's still hot.
Yeah. So I would go find her. I would seek her out, and I'd sit down beside her, and she was mildly annoyed by me. I could tell, but, you know, I'm kind of quick on my feet and funny and make people laugh, and I started to make her laugh some. And
was she not impressed by the music thing?
She could have cared less. Absolutely could have cared less.
Even though she was hired to be in the video, you guys, here they are, Nashville sign, ba-bam, ba-boom, this is nothing, huh?
She could have cared less. I'm telling you, it was amazing. And I was like, anything that a younger me or any younger musician would use to, you know, to impress a young lady, you know, like, hey, look at me. Well, don't I look sexy when I play? Nothing. I mean, nothing, nothing. And so at the end of the night, we're talking. I'm on a truck bed with her. I never on a tailgate. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I hate this because, like, after we wrap, I'm never going to get to see you again. This sucks. It's been really great talking to you. And she said, well, actually, I'm engaged. And I know that you didn't know that because they made me take my ring off. But I'm getting married in about a month or so, a couple of months, whatever it was.
4 months, I believe you say.
Yeah.
Ish.
Might have been. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, this is terrible. But she's been really, really nice to me tonight. And she's talked to me and we've shared. And she finally goes, can I go on your bus and use the restroom before I leave so I don't have to use the porta potty? And I was like, absolutely, I'll take you up. So while she's in using the restroom, I pull out a piece of paper and write my phone number down, and I handed it to her, and I said, listen, I know you're going to ask for this anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and give this to you. Just like that, too, you know, really cheesy. And she takes it, and she goes, my daddy raised me never to call boys, but if you want to get in touch with me, this is my number. And I just thought, man, who's going to give their number to somebody if there isn't a little bit of chink in the armor there? So I kept calling her. She never called me back, honestly. And I ran into her at the old Green Hills Grill. And I ran into her again at another restaurant. I forget where we were that time.
Was she ever with her fiance?
She was never with him. She was with her mom and her grandmother and a friend another time. And I ran into her the second time, and I called her, and I said, this is the last time I'll call, I promise. But if that isn't a sign that we shouldn't at least, like, go to lunch, I don't know what it is. So let's just go to lunch. And we went to lunch, and honest to God, we sat there for 5.5 hours. We met at noon. She left there at 5:30. And it was really like I'd known her my entire life. Honestly, it was so easy and so fun and natural, and you know, now we're old and sick of each other. But at the time, it was, I'm kidding.
Have you thought that she never had a fiance and this whole thing was a...
No, okay. I know him.
All right, I know him. I know you do.
Yeah.
So, then she has to, like, break it off, huh?
Well, it was, you know, I think that I was more the straw that broke the camel's back. It was headed that way anyway. And she did tell me, she said, I need to sort my life out. I've had fun with you, and I definitely love being around you, but I've got to make some big decisions and decide what I'm doing with my life here. And so she shut it down with me for a long time. And one day I got a call from her saying that she had told her dad she couldn't get married. And we went to dinner and were never apart after that. And here we are 15 years tomorrow.
Is that right?
Later.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. What are you going to do on your big anniversary?
Well, we got to leave.
What do rich people do on their anniversaries?
I don't know. Well, let's find some and ask them.
Stop.
You know how much kids cost? And you've seen my wife. You know how much money she spends? I need a gig on Idol or something. Can you get me another judge spot?
Stop it. You know, I remember watching, because I was over in Pop whenever you guys crossed over.
Yeah.
I grew up in Arkansas, so I was a diehard country fan. But when I went to Pop, I kind of checked out a bit because I was just consumed by...
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
tecovas.com.
tecovas.
Yeah. Yeah.
tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboar'snest.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones.
I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. What I was doing with my work.
Yeah.
And you guys, What Hurts the Most, that was a big song in country and then started to creep into my world a bit, right? And so I remember watching you guys on Yes, Dear.
Yeah. That was up for a daytime Emmy, wasn't it? Our performance on there.
Listen, and I remember thinking, oh, I like these guys because, I mean, I can remember it vividly. Yeah. You know, Yes, Dear was a sitcom, and you guys like showed up and they were trying to get into your show.
Yeah.
And then you showed
stole
up.
Our limo.
Yeah, and they got you. And you guys, then you're all like riding together in the back of the car. That's funny. That's, I think, my first like real moment of knowing who you guys' faces were.
I'm still dear friends with Liza Snyder from that show. We forged a really great friendship from that show, and I, that's a favorite memory of mine. That was a fun shoot. It was about 3 days.
Well, so you're making it over in country, but it's got to be a whole different world once all of like
oh yeah,
boulders are falling instead of.
It was weird, man. When What Hurts the Most was number one on Top 40 radio, it was a moment that I'll never forget because we started getting calls to then go to, which was unheard of back then. It was a different time. Not a lot of, like now you'll see a lot of country acts like Dan and Shay and Florida Georgia Line and folks like that and a little big town at the AMAs and at the Grammys and things. It just wasn't that common back in, 10, 15 years ago, and we were getting calls to do those shows, People's Choice Awards, you know, and it was like, wow, this is cool. This is beyond the scope of the CMAs, the CMTs, and the ACMs, and which we loved, but we were opened up and exposed to a whole nother world. And I remember sitting on the floor of the American Music Awards with Gary, and Gary sitting next to me, and he nudged me, and he goes, would you have ever thought we'd be able to do this? Sit in this room with Jay-Z, Beyonce, Madonna, Lady Gaga, all of these people. And he said, I'm going to lay something on you you haven't thought about. I said, what? This was the year 2006. He said, we've sold more records this year than anybody in this room. And it stopped me in my tracks. And he wasn't saying it to be boastful or to like be, you know, braggadocious about it. He was saying, can you believe what we've done outside of just being in country music? And it was overwhelming to me. I never will forget that night and that moment that we shared during the commercial break there with just the two of us. It was so cool.
Did you guys get crap for being a mainstream success from any of the Nashville, you know, hardcore country folks?
Not really. No, to be honest, we didn't. We had, I mean, people I felt like were, you know, except for the moment there when the song was released, Murder on Music Row, and they talked about pop coming over and infiltrating country. It was a little bit of a movement there, but most people rallied around us and got behind us. And, you know, there was a batch of us doing something different, and Keith Urban and us and Shadazy at the time, and a few people that were putting poppier elements into the country music, and I feel like they welcomed it. And it was, you know, some of the critics, of course, derided us early on, and we got a bad rap, but most of the people in the music industry were kind of excited that there was kind of a new movement coming along, you know.
Bless the Broken Road, another song that crept into my life and then slammed into my life because we played it all the time on pop radio.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are a full-fledged, not that you're not country, but you're a pop act at this time. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just expected. I'm talking about from my side. When's the next Rascal Flatts song coming out?
Wow. That's really cool to hear you say that, because I don't think a lot of people are saying that today. You know, I mean, it was a we had that sweet spot where you're kind of in Adele, you know, and you just sit there in it and soak it all up, because it seems like you have a moment in time where you put a song out, it resonates with people, and you have your fingers crossed, and you put another one out, and it resonates with people, and then you start to get scared that you're going to be in this spot to where you're never going to be able to put another song out that resonates with anybody. And it was such a magical time for us. We had about 10 years there that were just phenomenal. And it's a testament to the songwriters in this town too, because the songs we were able to get our hands on, the writers that were sitting in rooms writing for us, that knew what we wanted to say, how we wanted to sing it, really had their fingers on the pulse of who Rascal Flatts was. I can't thank them enough.
The Cars song, which people know it as the Cars song. I actually know it from Eddie Money. No. I want to say Eddie Money. It's not Eddie Money. It's the original singer of Life is a Highway.
Yeah, Tom Cochran.
It's Tom Cochran. That's right. But you guys sing this. This was never a single.
No, it wasn't.
But again, it was played everywhere.
I know.
Yeah.
And that movie was huge, huge, huge for us. And I remember going to dinner here at the Capitol Grill with John Lasseter, who took us out and showed us storyboards of the movie, going, I've got this movie about these cars that talk to each other.
You saw the storyboard of Cars.
Storyboards,
right?
Yeah. And I really want you guys to do this montage where he's on Route 66 and he's driving and you're doing Life is a Highway and we're looking at these storyboards and he's wearing a Toy Story shirt with Woody on it. And it's weird, kind of, you know. John's a sweet guy, but it's just kind of like, can we write a song? No, I really want you guys to remake, you know, Life is a Highway. I'm like, Chris LeDoux did it in the 90s and kind of made it a hit again. And are you sure we can't write a song? He goes, I really got a vision for this, guys. If you'll see these cars talk to each other. You know, it's like, wow. So we did it. And one of the best decisions we ever made. First song we ever cut with Dan Huff, by the way.
Who's been on this show and is a dear friend. I don't know. I talked to Dan like 3 days ago. And Dan, if you go back and listen to an older show, if you're listening to this right now, Dan would talk about how he would cut songs for like Paula Abdul, or he'd play guitar on them.
Yeah.
Not know she was even doing the vocals. And he'd be in the airport and go, I really like that guitar lick. And his brother would be like, that's you, idiot.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's so good.
And he's so humble. It's disgusting. There's not a kinder human being on the planet. And he's played on, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know this. I'm going to tell something on Dan. He started Whiteheart, one of the Christian bands that I was obsessed with as a kid. He was one of the founding members with his brother, David. And so I followed him early on before he was even a session player in LA and playing on all those hit records. There was something special about his playing, even in that band, that I knew that I loved and gravitated towards. So that's another great blessing in my life, is to be able to come back around and work with somebody like Dan, have him produce our band, and be in his presence and watch him work is just something I never would have ever expected or dreamed either, you know? And now to be able to call somebody like him a true friend is just phenomenal to me. It blows my mind, you know?
Was there ever a point with you guys, you three, that you're like, this is probably it, we're done?
When Lyric Street shut down in 2010, we sat around in my man room and looked at each other and were like, do we have anything left to say even? I mean, it's been a great 10-year run. We were getting ready to either quit or make a management change, and a lot of things were going to change, and we knew it, and it was going to be tough. And we sat around and considered whether or not it wasn't time to lay Rascal Flatts down. And I think after an hour or so of talking with each other, it was just like, it hurts me to think about the last time that I'll look over to my right and not see Gary beside me. When I think about that day, it makes me emotional. I don't know when that day will be, but I wasn't ready to face it. And to think about never making music with the two of them again, boy, it's something that, even though we're in 20 years and we love each other like brothers, and we've certainly fought like brothers before, I love those guys with all my heart, and we've done some things that a lot of people will never see or never be able to do. And we've been in the trenches together, and we know each other in ways that our own wives don't even know us. And to think about not having that anymore, I think all of us were not ready, and we were willing to stay together because we felt like we had more to say and more to do. And we still do. I don't know that it's going to come to a close anytime soon. I think we will all three have things we want to do individually as we get older and have opportunities to, but I don't see us ever really going away and having an official quote-unquote breakup.
Do you ever think about a side band?
I'm in one already, and it's tough to be in that one sometimes in the time that it takes and the commitment level. I've thought about maybe doing side projects, well, things like
what's
that.
What's the side band that you're in? Why do I not know this? Or do I know this? Is it a secret?
No, I mean, I'm in Rascal Flatts and the commitment.
Like, I was like, how do I not know a side band?
No, I don't have. I mean, I certainly love making music on any level.
And you're producing music, by the way.
Yeah, well, I opened up a Christian label back in October, so I've got artists signed there to that label that I'll be releasing records on, so my time commitment there with that new thing in my life is pretty substantial, so I'm going to try to make sure that's as successful as it can possibly be, and I want to continue making music and producing for other people, and I've had the chance to do a lot of great things, and, I'm at a really great point in my life now to where I really, really enjoy everything that I'm doing right now. And I'm not just doing it because I have to, you know?
Has Gary ever said, hey, I think I'll do a solo record?
I think Gary will do a solo record someday. I don't know what it'll be. It may be a Christian record. I'm not sure what it will be. And I think, here's the thing. I think he should do a solo record. I think that if it's in him and something he wants to do, I would support that. In his aspirations and dreams, 1,000%.
Would you have 7 years ago? Or do you feel now you're at a place where you're kind of comfortable with where the band is? You hit it big. You came back. You hit it big again. You've mm-hmm. had, in the last few years, you've had number ones again.
Yeah.
So is a part of that because of all this success and now you feel a little more like we're stationary, like we're a thing? What if he'd have come, you know, after Bless the Broken Road and said, guys, I want to do a quick solo thing.
Yeah.
Like you ever see Bohemian Rhapsody with like Freddie?
Oh yeah.
You got to do a solo record.
Yeah.
That didn't happen at all with you guys?
It didn't happen. I think that all of us appreciated where we were and appreciated each other and loved each other. And Gary was extraordinarily gracious in the fact that he was in a band and never put us in a bad position to go, I think I'm going to go off on my own here for a little bit and try it on my own. And you know, I'm grateful to him for that. The flip side is it doesn't turn out well for a lot of people that try to leave a group yeah. situation and go out on their own. It's really tough to do. And when you've done it at a high level like we have, and all of a sudden you got to realize you're coming out of your own pocket to pay for all of the luxuries that you won't have anymore because you're virtually starting over, I think it's hard for some people.
Well, look at you. Here you are with a book.
Yeah. I'm all grown up.
Has the book tour been a grind for you?
It has been, but it's been fun. I mean, I've enjoyed being able to talk about my life and being able to celebrate my mother and tell my story from a different side. You know, I'm sure maybe you deal with some of this too, but I've always been, you know, like referred to as the funny guy or the cut up in the band or the whatever. And I wanted the chance to really tell some things from my perspective and talk about my philosophies on life, and hopefully people see another maybe a little bit deeper side to me than just being the funny guy.
Yeah, it probably, you know, you get to exercise a bit of depth.
Yeah.
Which people don't always come to the funny guy for.
Right.
And so, it feels good, right? Like, it feels like, it's kind of like a real, it's a lot. It's a lot to dig up this stuff, and it's a lot, even for me, it was tough to re-talk about this stuff. But then you start to realize, which back to your very first point, was there are people out there that are struggling with some of the same things that you struggle with, that I struggle with, that feel like they're alone.
I know.
And if you can see that you know, Mr. Rascal Flatts can do it and had it happen to him and can deal with it, then
yeah,
then it happens to everyone.
I think that's the point, is you think about people when they're by themselves and the lights are off and the door's shut and they're behind closed doors, what kind of pain and hurt that people deal with on a daily basis, we'll never know. And sometimes it's nice to know that somebody you know or somebody you may look up to or somebody you may admire has gone through some of the same things. And look, here's how they've dealt with it. And here's how they've overcome it. And how they still deal with it. You know, it doesn't go away. Hurt and pain doesn't go away the older you get. You just learn a different skill set and you have a different bag of tools to deal with it. And that's all I wanted to do was just say, look, if you're willing to try therapy and you're willing to try pills to balance out chemical imbalances and things like that, maybe there's another option. And maybe that option could be finding your own faith in God and finding your own relationship with Him, because you might find some hope and strength you never even dreamed before.
You say your greatest blessing isn't the flats. It isn't even your family, but it's hope.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I meant that hope was the only thing I had sometimes. Before I had my family or before I had the flats or anything, all I had was hope. And sometimes it would be the smallest little ounce of hope. It would be a friend that would call me out of the blue and go, I thought about you the other day. Just wanted to check in on you. You doing okay? And it would blow me away because it would be when I needed it the most and least expected it. Or I would see a sign on a billboard in front of a church that would be a scripture, and I would look it up in the Bible, and it'd be, you know, something that would give me, like, hang in there. You're on the right track. I know you can't feel it, but you got to stay the course. Sometimes it was my mom. A lot of times it was my mom going, you're not coming back home. You're where you're supposed to be, and you've got to stay there. You got to stay the course. You got to, you know, dust yourself off, get back up on your feet, and keep moving forward. And that's what I mean about hope. My mom gave me that gift, and I didn't even realize she was giving it to me when she was dragging me off to church three or four times a week. But it was in there, and it took deep root in me, and I relied on it later on in life when things got really, really bad.
We're going to end with this. Oh, by the way, do you watch Game of Thrones?
I don't. You are you a Thrones guy?
Yeah, I try not to be the Thrones guy that yells about it all the time.
Well, I know, and I feel so bad. I've given it like two shots, and I've made it through like three or four episodes, and it's just so much to keep up
with. It's so much, yeah.
I feel like I'm watching a high school play sometimes in about medieval times, and I'm sure it's great. But maybe I need to give it another shot, because a ton of people that I love and respect are obsessed with that show.
I think it's the greatest. It's not my favorite of my life, but I think it's the best TV show of my lifetime. And I think there's a difference.
The best TV show of your lifetime.
I think it's the best TV show of my lifetime. Not my favorite. So I don't. If I get to pick one, that's not it.
I caught one episode late one night called The Red Wedding or something like that, where everybody dies.
No, that's the one that everyone's
like. And I'm like, I don't think I could, like, I don't think I can deal with this on a weekly basis.
That was a shocker. That one was a big one. But yeah, it's a lot.
And you fall in love with the characters and they all die, right? Like every single one of them dies.
Listen. It's like Fight Club. You don't talk about it.
We don't talk about Fight Club.
It's a fantastic show. But you don't watch Thrones. What do you watch?
Well, I'm kind of more on I'm on the shallow end of things. Like, I'm really into Schitt's Creek right now on Netflix.
You know, I matched with the girl that's on the, I don't know if I should say who it is, but one of the main actresses. I'm on these dating apps, right?
Yeah.
And one of the main actresses on the show I matched with on the dating app.
Yeah.
And a little bit, you got to decide.
Have you talked to her?
Yeah. Hold on.
That is awesome.
I'll pull up her. Then we've been talking.
I love that.
Because the apps are crazy, man. It's like instant access to everyone. You can just, it's like free. Like, even 10 years ago, you know, with.
It's something we talk about all the time, too. Don't you love how brave people are on social media when they get behind a keyboard? They can just get on there and just torpedo you with no repercussions.
I think that people just want to be heard, they find that the best way to be heard is to be the loudest and most obnoxious.
It just bugs the crap out of me.
Do you look at your Facebook or no? I don't look at the show Facebook page.
I don't look at it, and I've almost thought about muting my Instagram comments because there'll be 100 great comments, and my personality is to zone in on the one guy that's being an ass. You know what I mean? And it will just send me over the edge, and I'll be like, dude, what did I...
This is who I matched with. You don't have to say who it is. But we've been talking. Do you recognize him from the show?
Of course I do. Absolutely.
The whole
Do you watch the show?
Yeah, of course. And that's why when I saw her, I was like, I'll click the heart. And then I was surprised that the heart came back. And so, yeah, that show's shot in Canada. So she's
Is it Vancouver?
I'm not sure where it's shot.
That's if you're out in LA, you can
just go up straight up.
Just go straight up.
Schitt's Creek's funny. Yeah. What else are you watching?
I'm a huge Walking Dead fan.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Me Too, Die Hard was my favorite show for years, but I got kind of lost.
Yeah.
And like I think I'm like a season behind, and I don't know where I got lost, and I'm not super into catching up.
The show's not the same without Rick. It's really lost a little bit, and I got to tell you, it almost lost me for good when they at the beginning of a couple seasons ago when they my buddy Michael Cudlitz was on there. And they bashed his brains in with the baseball bat, and then they.
Michael Cudlitz played who?
He played Abraham.
Oh yeah,
redhead.
Yeah, red hair.
And then they killed Glenn off too, and they like popped his eyeball out with the baseball bat. And
it was
and
the finale or the first episode, whenever.
Negan
came in.
And I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan; he's a fantastic actor. They took it so far because of the shock factor that they always try to do with that show, and you never know who's going to die. And I get it, and I'm such a huge fan of the show, but it started to lose me a little bit, to be quite honest.
Yeah, after Rick was gone, I just kind of got lost what episode it was, and then I wasn't just terribly torn to get back at it.
I know, and I love Daryl, but I don't know that he's enough to hold the show by himself. I've turned into a TV critic all of a sudden, haven't I?
We all are at this point. Everything's so good.
I know.
If it's not so good and right up our algorithm, our human algorithm to what show we want, then we just move on to the next thing.
And I love Chrisley Knows Best. I've been on a bunch of those episodes with Todd. He's a buddy of mine.
He wrote on the back of your book. He's not a douchebag. Read the book.
Exactly. He's not the jerk you think he is all of the time. Sometimes. You know what show I like is 9-1-1. I think that's a pretty good show on Fox. Caught any of this?
With Connie Britton?
The first season. She's not in the second season, but it's pretty decent. And what we do is Allison and I just binge on some stuff every once in a while. I'm trying to think of what else we're watching right now.
Do you ever watch any of the Marvel stuff on Netflix, like The Punisher?
I don't. God, is it good?
It's the best show to binge.
Is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. any good?
I didn't get into it. Did you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, it's all right.
I was never torn to watch. And he's a big. You see The Last Avengers? I haven't.
Yeah, I saw Endgame.
So
it's amazing.
I turn off Twitter when Game of Thrones ends because I'm on Idol at the same time and have to go home, so I don't even look at it. But I'm avoiding everything Avengers until I can watch Endgame because it's supposed to be so freaking good.
Let me tell you, I was amazed at how great it was. I mean, it was
3 hours, and is that good, huh?
You don't know it's 3 hours. I mean, it goes by in a blink, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it really, really does.
You excited about John Wick 3?
Have you seen
it? Me too.
Yeah, I actually love those movies.
I think Keanu Reeves is my favorite actor. Yeah. I've declared that he's now my favorite because you can make fun of him.
You can.
But look at his body of work.
Respect the body of work.
So he's now America's favorite actor and mine.
I love it. And you know what else? I got to tell you. Cobra Kai is fantastic too.
See, I haven't seen it. I know it's a YouTube show.
You got to watch it, man. It's fantastic. What these guys have done with the storyline 30 plus years later with these two, you never see coming. It is really fantastic. Now, Billy Zabka, who plays Johnny, is one of my lifelong dearest friends. So I've been a Karate Kid fanatic since the first movie came out when I was a teenager. But what they've done with the story and how they've taken those two characters, you would really, really appreciate and love.
Interesting. Well, listen, here's the question I was going to ask you before I veered off. The last question I'll ask you. If you could tell yourself, you could give your 16-year-old self one little bit of advice from you right now, what would you tell him?
Condoms do break.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Listen, check out the book. It's Shotgun Angels, My Story of Broken Roads and Unshakable Hope. How hard was that subtitle to have and to come up with?
It was pretty tough. They wanted to,
What was the first title of the book? Because I went to like 19 titles.
It was called something like Hope in the Forgotten Places or something. I mean, there were so many different variations of that. I was like, none of them made me happy. My co-author, actually, Timothy, came up with that because of two stories in the book about my folks and also the angels that ride shotgun next to you that you don't even know about.
Look at this. He's got a book. You play a couple songs on the keyboard.
He's got a gift on the piano.
He says occasionally funny things. I'm glad
he's no Bobby Bones. I tell you, this guy right here is no Bobby Bones.
True. Thank God. Listen, Jay, good to see you, bud.
Good to see you too. Thank you for your time.
109.
Look at this. You ever been interviewed for an hour straight? 101? Yeah.
Hey, and it's just like Avengers Endgame. It didn't even feel like it.
We both die. Right. I don't even know what happened in Avengers. All right, listen, thank you. We'll see you next time. Episode 177, thanks, everybody. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk Wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.